Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
And welcome back. I have to tell you something new today that you've never heard before. Taxation is theft.
I never heard that, Dan. Is that true?
It is. I just found out today.
Whoa!
It is absolutely, it blew my mind. Ken, how's it going?
It goes, hey, I'll take my hat off. It's cold here where I am. Wool hat.
I forgot. You don't have any hair. I'm so close. Look at this mess I have on top of my head. I'm so close to shaving it.
Do it, man. It was the most liberating thing I did besides joining the Libertarian Party, I'll tell you.
Oh, man.
No, it's great. I'm for folks who don't know, I'm up north of Seattle in the Olympic Peninsula of Washington right now. It's a little bit colder than where Dan is at the moment.
The Olympic Peninsula, does that mean it's Olympic-sized?
Yeah, it is. It's an Olympic-sized peninsula. I'm up in Squim, Washington, yes.
Swim, Washington.
Swim.
Squim. With a Q?
S-E-Q-U-I-M. Squim.
Interesting. Yeah, it's been a while since I've been up in Washington, but I remember it was a cold, damp place.
Well, we're in kind of the blue belt here. It's interesting that it's kind of warmer here, even though we're north of, in the state. So it's pretty good, but it's wet here right now. It's just very wet, and it's, yeah. So looking forward to getting done with that.
Awesome. Well, spring is just around the corner, which is good news for everyone because, of course, we've got this coronavirus thing. Everybody's locked in their homes. How are you doing with that? Because you've been a nomad for a while. How are you holding up? Are you still moving around, or is that where you're staying?
I've been some kind of mad for a while, but yeah, we did 51,000 miles around the country in the last year. And we were actually in New York State when all the warnings started going up to head for cover. So we hunkered down in Buffalo for a couple of days and then made a sprint over here to Washington State. And we're in a hunting cabin, a 100-year-old hunting cabin here in Washington, and we're self-quarantining. We're taking it seriously. It's all voluntary. Government does not twist my arm, but we're taking care of people right now.
So that's an interesting thing because I actually created this page on my website where you can go and send a postcard. It says taxation is theft, like the black and yellow, like this. And on the back, it's a postcard. And like, all you have to do is you go to the website and you type in what message you want to put. And then there's a link that gets you the addresses of all your governors. Right. So you can send a letter to your governor that says, you know, go screw yourself. You don't have the right to order me to stay in my own home. Because what's pissed me off is that some of these governors are like, we're ordering you to stay indoors. You don't have the authority for that. And I'm going to stay indoors, but it's not because you told me so. And I think that's a really important message to get across because like, it's like there's kind of like these madmen who are like these tyrants. If they believe that we're indoors because they told us we have to be, and we're afraid of what their police are going to do to us if we don't, I think that gives them that gives them like a God complex to say like, oh, we can do whatever we want. Whatever we tell them to do, they'll do it. What's your feeling on that?
So true. Yeah. Well, you know, we on our way here to Washington, we came through Oregon. We had to pick some stuff up there. And there's things posted all over Oregon By executive order of the governor, you are required to stay in, or you're required to. And I'm thinking, you know, first of all, Kate Brown, the governor of Oregon, the gal went off the deep end a long time ago. But does she not know that executive orders only apply to government agencies? She can't create law by executive orders. She can't tell Ken Armstrong, you have to stay in the house by executive order. It doesn't work that way. But I'll tell you what, I care about people. So as somebody who believes in the non-aggression principle, I don't want to be risking other people. I'm going to stay inside and help take care of people, but not because Kate Brown told me to.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting point. But I, like, you know, politically, what do we do to let these governors know? Because I mean, you know, we could. I created a hall pass on my page where like people could like, you know, print a thing out that says they're working for me for my campaign, and therefore they're essential employees. But like, I mean, you know, what's that going to do? It's going to get somebody to like, you know, they'll be able to tell a cop to go fuck off. But what's, you know, what do we do? How do we fight the long-term effects of this God complex that these governors are going to get from like, oh yeah, we'll just tell them for, you know, there's a virus, whatever they want. We have to raise taxes because of the virus. We have to take their property. We have to do this.
Yeah, right. You know, this is a crazy thing, Dan, because, you know, we want to be good people. We want to be good neighbors and all of that kind of stuff. That's what NAP is really all about. But at the same time, we cannot let government get away with this stuff. And, you know, I think to an extent, we need to, all of us, kind of double down. We need to put all of the chips on the table and really, really hunker down with our efforts to get as many of these bums out of office as we possibly can. You know, people have been saying for a long time, if you vote for a libertarian, that's throwing away your vote. Well, damn it, throw away your vote then, but don't vote for those bums.
Right. I just want to throw this out there. Anybody who's watching right now, press the share button and start a watch party. Get some more people in on this, because this is going to get interesting. I feel it's necessary for me to ask you this question. You decided to run against me for the nomination for president. What makes you think you're better than me?
You know, I wouldn't have run, but I heard Dan Furman was running, and I thought, you know, I got to run against that bum. You know, I've said this all along, Dan, and you know personally, because we've spent a lot of time together. I love you, guy. I really do, and a whole lot of what you stand for is the same stuff I stand for. I just think I'm a hell of a lot smarter than you are, and I've got a lot more experience.
You do have a better voice.
I've got this killer voice. You got better hair. If we could have your hair and my voice, then we'd have it made.
And through the miracle of CGI, we can make that happen.
No, all my life, I've wondered why this weird, eclectic resume that I've been putting together. And right now it makes sense. That's all I can tell you.
So let's talk about that, because NATO. No, not NATO. Yeah, NATO.
Yeah.
I for some reason, like, I'm like, I hear NATO, I hear UN, and they're almost the same to me, but not. I'm like, but they are not. But like, for some reason, they just trigger the same kind of response of like, yeah.
Well, they're both attempts at the same thing. They went in very different directions, but you know, both of them, when they were started, they were kind of attempts at the same thing. And I've been with both. I've been with the United Nations and with NATO, but I commanded a little NATO base in Italy, and I went back over during the Bosnian War as a NATO advisor. And, you know, inside the Libertarian Party, that sets off alarms immediately. Oh, my God, a military
statist guy.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Last thing we need. You know, I'm one of the ones who saw from the inside the strengths and the weaknesses of NATO. And I'll tell you, NATO had its purpose once upon a time, although we could argue about the U.S. putting Stalin in power and then setting up NATO to counter Stalin. Some weird stuff. But the thing is, the purpose of NATO was to fight the Cold War in Europe. And the Cold War ended arguably in 1991. There are people voting now who weren't even alive when the Cold War ended. And yet NATO continues. And I think it's, you know, it's one of those beasts that forgot to die. And we need to put the thing out of its misery. We need to close down the NATO bases. And we need to stop spending money on the NATO alliance. And if we want to have individual treaties with countries who are good neighbors and friends to us, then we can do that. But we don't need NATO to do that.
So what is NATO doing right now?
Well, NATO is the justification for the Afghanistan war. I'd encourage anyone who's listening to go Google Afghanistan papers and read the true history of what's going on in Afghanistan and what the government has known for the last 20 years, right? I think you've looked at that, Dan. But the NATO charter is the justification for the war in Afghanistan. It started with 9/11. We've been using the response to 9/11 as the single one justifying principle behind almost everything that we've done, toppling regimes over there and all kinds of stuff. And we need to get out of that business desperately. We've done more damage. We've toppled regimes of bad guys, and they've been replaced with worse guys because we're not smart enough to know that, you know, it's better to deal with somebody you know than to deal with the great unknown. I don't know.
Right. And I don't know. Like, it's, I guess there's a couple different ways to look at it. You could look at it with your conspiracy theory hat and say, you know, they're doing this on purpose because they want, you know, they want the bad guy in charge as long as it's the bad guy we're in control of. But then there's also, okay, maybe they're doing it with good intentions of something. And good intentions, of course, always go bad. But it's, if you look at it with the lens of good intentions going bad, it's kind of the same thing we have here. It's like every time we elect a president, everybody thinks like, oh yeah, no, this is going to be great. It's going to be, you know, this is the guy who wins. Everybody liked him better. Good things are going to happen. And then of course you have expansion of government powers because maybe let's use Trump. Let's use Obama. Either one of them expanded government power beyond what they should have done, what they were constitutionally allowed to do. And even if that was done with good intentions, that's one reason that we as citizens need to be vigilant and say, no, you can't do that. We have to push back, because if we don't push back, they're just going to be like, okay, well, yeah, it's unconstitutional, but it's needed now and nobody's really fighting us on it. So it should be cool, right? And then, of course, the next president comes to power and they use that for something bad, or something bad goes wrong that we can no longer control because the government's like, well, we created the problem, we have to fix it. And the people even look to them that way, like, you created the problem, you fix it. And they try to fix it by creating another problem. And it's just like this spiraling rabbit hole. And the only solution seems to be, we'll take their power away from them, because if they don't have the power to abuse in the first place, nothing can go wrong, right?
You know, that's absolutely true. And of course, every president takes power and he says, well, the way I'm going to solve this is I'm going to take just one more power. I'm going to do just one more thing so that I can undo all of the evil that's been done before me. And so it's an accretion. They're gradually taking more and more to themselves. A good example, and it's not the president, but a really good example of how it works is, When the Democrats controlled Senate a few years back, they didn't like the fact that the Republicans could filibuster them on judicial appointments. So they passed what's called the nuclear option, where they get, you know, they try the filibuster, but if it doesn't work, then they go to just a simple majority vote. And they did that so that they could have the power to get their judicial appointments in. Well, surprise, the Republicans are in charge of Senate now. and the Democrats are screaming that the Republicans are using the nuclear option that they put in place. You know, you have to realize that this power that Trump is taking to his office will be used by the next guy, whether the next guy is, you know, right wing, left wing, whatever, the next guy is going to use it until one of us, you or me, hopefully, Dan, one of us is sitting in the Oval Office and we say, this is enough. We have to refuse to use these powers that were previously given to the president. And I'd even say to the extent that I'd be willing to sign a constitutional amendment that gets rid of a lot of the executive privilege and a lot of the crap that Trump has been pulling.
And that's what I like to say about like a libertarian president is, you know, all these other presidents are, you know, whether it's Trump or Sanders, I don't know too much, like, I don't even know what the hell Biden wants to do. But they have all these plans and they require, you know, a new program, a new agency. And of course that requires Congress creating that. And then, you know, so before they can actually take that power, and then there's of course executive orders, but that's another story. But so with the libertarian president, it's like, no, when we get into office, we actually want to shut down some of these agencies. We want to close some of these programs. We want to stop the spending. And we don't need Congress to not do something. What we do need Congress for is to say, you know, like you said, sign an amendment to take those powers away completely. But you first need Congress and the Senate to create and pass that so that you could sign it. So that's where we do need them. But at the same time, like, I'm just watching down in the corner. Everybody's going live right now. There's Dan Fishman and Nick Sarwark.
Hey guys, how you doing?
That's our competition. So yeah, but that's the thing. Because ultimately, if we don't end that power and take that power away from government, then when we're out of office, and I don't know, at the same time, by the time one of us gets elected, the next president, probably, they're probably not going to go, once you go libertarian, you don't go back. That's not going to happen. But if it were to, like, you know, they say good times, like, oh yeah, well, we're doing so well financially, maybe it's time for Bernie Sanders' healthcare plan. And if that power is still there and we haven't signed it away and eliminated it, then they can just walk right into office and take that power over again.
That's the point. Yeah, exactly. That's why I favor a constitutional amendment. I think that number 46 has to be the libertarian president who says, look, I want to make sure that nobody does what my predecessors have done. And I'm willing to sign off on a constitutional amendment, encourage the states to ratify it, to take these powers permanently away from the Oval Office. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's probably a lot we could do with the Ninth Amendment too. This is what I find interesting. Like, okay, so we have enumerated rights, right? The Bill of Rights, which says there's a few rights that we have, and people don't recognize that. People don't recognize that that's not the government giving us those rights. That's the government demanding itself stay away from those rights. And the Ninth and Tenth Amendment says there's a bunch of rights that aren't even listed here that we also have to keep our hands off of, even though they're not listed.
The Ninth Amendment, that's what they call in law the numeral rights, the rights that are just natural, they're in the air. And those are just as real as the right to free speech, the right to assemble, all of those rights that we have. And the courts over time have identified what some of those rights are. But I want to say, there's a lot of talk these days about rights. And some people will say, for example, I have the right to free health care. You don't have the right to anything that already belongs to somebody else. So I can't say I have the right to free healthcare if that means Dan's got to pay for my healthcare. That's not my right. My right is to have the things I have and not have them taken away from me. That's what my right is.
Right. But I think to a degree, that's like a, that's just been a marketing scheme. I mean, you get the Democrats to come around saying like healthcare is a human right, which, and here's the interesting thing. You can actually agree with that and say, yes, healthcare is a human right. So when you go to the doctor, you should be able to say, hey, I want you to check me out and see what's wrong with me. And there shouldn't be so much government in it. You should be able to hand them money. The government shouldn't care if they're licensed or if they have enough bureaucrats working for their, like, that is your right to healthcare. It's not, oh yeah, I'm going to go to a doctor and it's going to be free. And I think that's, we can probably work with that idea. And this is what I've done with my campaign with the free healthcare thing is like, we can work with that and say it is a right. Like, and some people like to clarify, no, healthcare is not a right, but access to healthcare is a right. Okay. That's about the same thing. But yeah, like there's this, there was this philosopher that said something about when you write something into law, there's like some, this certain degree of I don't know what he called it, like a certain degree of credibility or legitimacy that comes to it just because it's written into law, whether it's good or bad or anything else. And that's the thing. And there's so many conversations you'll have with people. Oh, I have a right to this. Like, and it can be something legit. Like, I have a right to feed myself. If I have food, I have a right to eat it. Where's that in the Constitution? Well, it's not there technically. So does that mean we don't have that right? We can only eat when the government tells us to? No, of course not. That's silly. So I think there's like, this comes like, and this is what they should be teaching us in school instead of this. Oh, you have the right to say whatever you want and you have the right to have guns as long as they're muskets. And like, you know, they teach us that. And we as a society don't teach our own kids. Like, I mean, very few of us teach our own kids that know that rights are inherent. They're human rights. They're built with us. And this is how that works. And then you have the government school that's like not telling us what our real human rights are, instead telling us, the government giving you this and this and this is what a human right is, which is totally backwards.
So a really good example of what you're talking about, Dan, is that there are a number of states that are what's called certificate of needs states, where in order to build a hospital, for example, you have to get a certificate of need approved by the state in order to build the hospital. Citizens mm-hmm. should have the right to create anything that doesn't harm anyone else, including building a hospital without the state's permission. But these states control this because they control the profit of the industry that way. They can give you all kinds of other reasons why they're doing it, but the reality is it's all about profit.
Right.
And the state should not have the right to control people's access to do what's good for them. I should be able to, if I want to eat GMO corn, I should be able to eat GMO corn, and the state shouldn't be able to tell me whether I can put GMOs in my body or not. If I choose not to, which is probably smarter, but that's
they
up
should
to
recommend
me.
Maybe.
Sure, but give not, me information.
Yeah,
that's what they should be doing with this coronavirus. They should be giving us all of the information that they have, instead of the president lying to us in the beginning and telling us through CDC and other agencies that this isn't even as bad as a flu bug. And now we're going to have 100 to 200,000 dead because of the way the government handled it. If they had gotten the information out to us early on, we could have taken a much different course of action.
Right. Well, I want to go back to certificate of need for a minute, because this is like, so this whole flattening the curve thing, right? And like, I talk about it all the time, but okay. So there's this curve. Let's just say it looks like this, right? And this is like, you know, over time, this many people are going to get sick, and then fewer and fewer, and fewer. And there's this line going across it right here. And they say that this is the capacity. I'm trying to line this up for this is the capacity of our healthcare system. And the problem is that this curve is too high and we can't handle that capacity, but if you lower it, then we'll be able to handle it. The problem is that's what this lockdown is about, is lowering this curve, when really it's like, what if you were to raise this line, the capacity? Because ultimately what they assume is everybody's going to get infected anyway. They're just trying to spread it out over time so our doctors can handle it. But the certificate of need thing, just like you said, is about profit. But literally what that is that saying, if a town has one hospital and it's a small town, then, well, we're not going to let you build a second hospital to compete with them because that's going to lower their profit, and we don't like that. But what that really does that means fewer hospitals, fewer hospital beds and everything else. So when a problem like this comes around, and it might not be a virus, because this might be very rare. This might happen once every 100 years, and this isn't going to happen again in our lifetime. But what if it's a tornado? What if it's a flood? What if it's an earthquake and we need a ton of hospital beds? It could be literally anything. It could be, a foggy day and there's like 100 car pileup and we just need, all these people rush to the hospital for all these automobile. It could be literally anything. And because they're trying to protect the profits and keep the prices up, they're limiting the number of beds. And that is limiting our freedom and our right, because that means there are all these other people, all these other doctors that would be, all these other investors that would be building more hospitals with more beds to treat us with more sophisticated equipment, because the one hospital that's there might be 30 years old. And if someone's building a brand new hospital, it's going to get all new equipment. That's taking away our freedom and our rights and our choices and everything else, just because they're trying to prop up some profits.
You know, that's absolutely true. And in addition to that, what they've done through many of the changes that came under Obamacare, before 2010, if you went into the hospital, chances are your personal doctor would come to the hospital and visit you, and he had privileges and he could see you in the hospital. Now what they do is they have hospitalists see you who don't know you, because your doctor can't come in and care for you in the hospital. And if you talk to these hospitalists, they can keep you in the hospital for 24 hours, 48 hours, whatever, based on the diagnosis you have. But they have no discretion at all, because they need those beds, and those beds have to make a certain amount of money. They got to make like $5,000 a day on one of those beds in order for it to pay for itself. So if we had more hospitals with more beds available, then when a doctor wants to exercise their discretion and say, my patient doesn't really have this diagnosis, but I think they need another day of observation, another day of rest, another day of care.
Right.
Then there's, if there's just fair competition in the marketplace, instead of the government controlling access to everything, then the doctors can make the decisions. The daily cost of care, instead of $5,000 a day for a bed, comes down to some kind of reasonable amount for the care. And in many cases, people don't even need insurance to pay for their health care. Back when I was a kid, and I know that, that was back in the dark ages, but my dad went into the hospital. My parents wrote a check for my dad's stay in the hospital.
Right.
It is possible to return to that.
Yeah, and so what's interesting is I bought some property down here in Mexico, and in the US you get property insurance. In Mexico you get life insurance. So if you die before you pay off the mortgage, then the bank or the insurance company pays off the mortgage for you, which is actually kind of cool, because then you get to keep the property and it goes in your inheritance to your next of kin, which is amazing. Like, imagine if we did that in the U.S., there would be, because that's the problem we have in the U.S. is nobody owns their own homes, which is why everybody's like, oh, shit, when the economy stops, it's like, oh, we got to make rent or we're going to be homeless. In Mexico, that's not really the case, because they're more concerned with like, no, this is an investment. This is something that we should not have to eternally pay rent for. And their property tax is actually really, really low, too. It's like 0.1%, which is most states, I think the lowest states in the U.S. are like 1%. So it's a tenth here. But OK, so my point is so I had to get life insurance, and to get life insurance, I had to go to the doctor and I had to do like an EKG, and like I had to do like they measured my heart rate and then told me to do a bunch of exercises, some squats and jumping jacks and everything else. And they measured my heart rate again. And then the doctor had to write up this note. And I had to send it to the insurance company. This whole thing cost like 1,500 pesos, which is like $75. And what was really interesting was I went downstairs to the clerk to pay, and they gave me three prices. They said, if you want to pay with a credit card, this is the price. Then the next one was less, and they said, if you want to pay cash, this is the price. And then they gave me an even cheaper one. What's cheaper than cash? They said, if you want to pay cash and you don't want a receipt, this is the price. So, yeah. So it's interesting that, like, and this has to do with, you know, they're, I mean, it's most people in Mexico are very open about not paying taxes because, you know, right. they're very libertarian in a way. Screw the system. They know the government's robbing them, which I think is fascinating. But to that point, like, this is exactly what it is. You go in, the waits are not that long. There are more doctors. Everything is cheaper. There's not so many bureaucrats. There's not so many regulations. And so this is like to your point, like, you should be able to just walk in and pay cash. And it should just be, you know, I mean, you go for your routine checkup. It should cost $75. You're seeing a doctor for like a half an hour, right? Not even. And you should be able to do it.
My last doctor visit when I was living down in Mexico, and I went in on a Saturday morning, she made a special, she came into the office just to see me, 200 pesos, $10. So, you know, people can take it out of their pocket and pay for it because there's fair market competition in Mexico for the healthcare.
Right.
Same with pharmaceuticals down there.
The wait lines are so much shorter. I know who is it that likes, I think Arvin likes to bring up the you know, LASIK and breast implants and how those are relatively unregulated markets, and those are there's no lines. And actually, this is really interesting because one of my neighbors had cataract surgery. He did one eye in the U.S. in California and one eye down here in Mexico. And he said in California, it was several thousand dollars, but his insurance paid for most of it. Down here in Mexico is $500. But also, and I don't know if this was like to justify the high prices that they had. Maybe it was the doctor's office was, you know, scamming the insurance company out of multiple visits, but he had to come back for multiple visits. And one of those visits, he said he actually just had to sit down and watch like this 20-minute video about what the process is going to be. And that was one of his appointments. And there were several appointments spanning over a month. And it took a long time to get his appointments set because they were so backlogged and everything else. Mexico, he came down here and it was, yeah, we can take care of your eye in 2 days from now. He came back 2 days later, in and out, same amount of time, done. None of these extra visits, so much less expensive. And where's that coming from? It's got to be from regulations and everything else.
And, you know, what a lot of people misunderstand, they think that Mexico is third world medicine. In Mexico City and in Guadalajara, they have some fantastic medical schools. So, my physician in Mexico, Santiago Hernandez, incredible physician. Hi, guys. Hey there.
They saw something in the tree.
Yeah. My doctor down in Jalisco, Mexico, Santiago Hernandez, born in Chicago, American-born physician, but he was educated in Guadalajara, and he's a top-notch physician. So the idea that you're getting bad medical care down there is just simply not true.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's weird. And it's, I think a lot of that is, I pointed out with a lot of things with Mexico, because there's a lot of misinformation from, and a lot of it's propaganda, and a lot of that propaganda comes from tourism boards. They want you to, there are tourism boards in Florida and probably other places in the U.S. that want to make Mexico look like a very dangerous place, so that when it's time to go on vacation, you don't want to go to their beautiful beaches. You want to go to the nasty, dark beaches of Miami, or, you know, something like, and overpriced. That's, they want you to spend your money there. And when they do that, they're trying to control and manipulate the market through, you know, all these things. And for a lot of people who don't travel to these places, they just don't know. They never see it for themselves. That's a lot of it. There's a lot about how, like, what's that?
There's never been any homicides in Florida, right?
Yeah, right? And that's the thing. Look at, you can look this up. Go look at the top cities, the top murder rates of by city in the world. And like in the top 20, there's like five cities from Mexico, and there's also five cities from the U.S. And they're all like mixed. It's not like Mexico, and then U.S. No, they're all mixed. That's the reality of it. On top of that, a lot of the people who are killed here, that's gang on gang crime. And when you come here, you'll see that there's a lot of police protection for tourism and the cartels even protect the tourists.
Exactly what I tell people. Yep, they do.
It's, you know, so because, yeah, that's where the money comes in. They know that. They're not stupid.
It's like when the mob used to run Las Vegas. Las Vegas was one of the safest cities in the world because they didn't want law enforcement to have to mess with anything. And the same's true down in Mexico right now. Yeah, you hear about a lot of violence, but it's gang on gang violence. The cartels don't want the government to come in and mess with things, so they don't want gringo tourists to get hurt down there.
Right. Yeah, so I guess, you know, back to the point about less government is better.
And competition, fair market competition, and coming back to the healthcare thing, you know, I wouldn't say Mexico is our model for healthcare, but when you look at the way healthcare is done in places like Mexico and Singapore, and you see how happy the people are with the system they have, it makes you wonder why the most productive, most prosperous country on the planet is having so much trouble delivering a system that makes the people happy. And it is because of one thing: government control.
Right. Which is essentially micromanagement. I would say that's one component of it. But I like what you just said, and I might steal this. You called it fair market competition, which I would like to even shorten to fair competition, because so the term free market has a lot of negative connotations to a lot of people. But if you were to call it and competition also, because competition, a lot of people think like, oh, people, you know, very competitive, they're cheating, they're, you know, this kind of thing. But fair competition,
it's not corporatism. That's when the government is giving an unfair. Right.
That's the whole thing. And this is like my whole, this is where I butt heads with the Libertarian Party a lot, with individuals, is that we're using the wrong words. We're using their words that they have designed to be weapons against, you know, the left and the right. And if we stop using those words and using our own words, like fair competition, that doesn't sound like corporatism. That doesn't sound like crony capitalism or capital. Some people think capitalism they think that describes all these bad things. We don't, but they do. And that's the problem. When we're talking to them and we say capitalism, it doesn't matter what we're picturing in our heads when we're talking. They're picturing something different, and we just shot ourselves in the foot.
And yeah, right. I get it. Sure.
But fair competition, I think is. I think that's a we should do market research on that word. I think that's really awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, honestly, and Larry Sharp likes to say consumer driven or consumer markets. And I think that's true. The people should be driving the market, not government. So whether you want to call it fair market or consumer driven, free market, that's kind of an old term from the Ayn Rand days of the party and all of that. There's nothing wrong with the idea of free market, except that it has some baggage attached to it now that we need to be clear about, I think.
Right. I had a thought pop into my head and then it just disappeared.
I heard the air as it rushed through. I don't know.
It went that fast, huh? Oh man. I think it was a good one too, but I don't know. I'll probably remember it later and be like, yeah, that was a terrible idea. So, So tell me a little bit more, because you've lived in Mexico for a while.
I lived down there for about 3 years. Yeah.
You lived in Hawaii for a while.
Yeah, a decade.
What was that like?
I loved it. My best souvenir of Hawaii is my wife. Yeah. I tried to get her to stand on the dashboard in a hula skirt. She wouldn't do it. But now Hawaii is just it's a really magical place. Just incredibly expensive because the government has controlled so much over there.
Right. And that's, there's a lot of, so like, I know the story about, there's like Mark Zuckerberg bought a lot of land out there. That was, you know a lot about this?
Not a lot about it.
It was property of the natives, but I've heard of this like in the Carolinas too. There was this thing where like the people who were there before had a different system of ownership where it was almost like community ownership. And so therefore when Zuckerberg comes in and says he wants, like all he has to do is bribe, a certain number of people. And then they're able to vote away the rights of everybody who owns this as community. And so it's like, there's this big piece of property, which is community, but then little people have like their people have their little individual homes on this land, but because the whole is community, some majority basically says, oh yeah, we're going to give all this to Zuckerberg, cause he bought it out. And now these people are basically forced out of their homes, even though
condemnation is the process. And in Hawaii for a long time, the Great Mahele was in 1848, where the land went from the royalty to other citizens. And it was divided up into these huge estates. And then from then until 1972, it was just kind of held in these big trusts. And since 1972, it's gradually, they've been breaking it up. But what happens is that the government can point to a land trust and basically say, okay, we're putting you in condemnation now. You have to sell off your land. And people can own houses on that land, but not own the land under the house. And so what happens is they end up being tenants on the property that they built their house on. It's really kind of a complicated and confusing thing, but the government has made it much worse over the last 40, 50 years through the condemnation process, because it's turned some of the land owners into very, very wealthy people, but it's also turned property owners into tenants because they couldn't own the property they lived on.
Right. This is one of the fundamental building blocks, I think, of society is like, and this should be like, you know, I've been thinking of like branding this as the new American dream. Everybody should own property. But when there are these rules in place, and maybe it's just property tax where you buy a piece of property and 30 years later, because you've been, you have to buy it back from the government every 30 years at the same price, through property tax. But like this is that. This is like people have this land and they have this home. And if the economy completely fails like it has, they still have their land and they might have their local food sources. They're able to, raise chickens and plant crops in case of emergency. Right. That's the bare minimum, bare essentials. And that should be the foundation that our lives are built on in case something like this happens. But it's been taken away. But what I'm interested in is like, because I've heard of. I know a guy in Texas who doesn't pay property tax because that's a system of smoke and mirrors. And he says they don't have the authority to charge property tax. And if you know what to say to them, and this is what I hate about the law, you have to know what to say to them to not get scammed by them. But I'm wondering, like, could the people on this land have said, if the government holds it in this trust, could these people have said, no, I've homesteaded this land is mine, and I've declared it as mine, and the trust has never objected to this, and therefore my squatter's rights supersede your trust rights, and the trust has no ability to take this land from me because squatter's rights.
So that's adverse possession, and Hawaii law says, no, you can't, unfortunately, because there was a license between the landowners and the and the property holders, and so that eliminates the claim for adverse possession. So sadly, no, the government has stacked the deck in favor of the people who were already wealthy to take advantage of the middle and lower class people. Hey, listen, I hate to say this, but I've got a virtual town hall in about 10 minutes. And
that's right. Thanks for joining. Real quick, if you just want to give a quick plug, somebody wants to help out your campaign, make a donation, volunteer, what do you need? Where do they go?
You know, first of all, Dan, you are such a great guy to even say that. And this is one of the things I love about being a libertarian, because we really are.
None of my people are going to go there. I just want to give you an opportunity.
Yeah, well, you know, but no, we're in this together. And I noticed you had Sam Robb on the other day, and, you know, that's a guy I love. And shout out to all of his supporters as well. So Armstrong2020.com. Check me out. Go to the new issues page. It's a little bit clearer than anything we've had before. And by all means, I know we're all libertarians and we're all broke, but send me some money anyway. You know, it can certainly help us keep going. So, hey, thanks so Absolutely. Much for doing this, Dan. You're a wonderful guy. And we joke about the taxation is theft thing. Whether it's theft or not, taxation is stupid. Let's get rid of it.
Absolutely. All right. You heard it. Taxation is theft. I'll see you guys next time. Later.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bad as hell.
I am
not gonna take this anymore.